morning. My name is Charles. I'm a board member here at Cedar Ridge, and today I'm going to talk about the movie Jeff Who Lives at Home. Can I just have a show of hands of anybody who's seen the movie by chance? Well, that's a lot more than I was expecting, actually. Good. Jeff Lives at Home, it's a movie that came out several years ago. It's a low-budget movie. I don't think it made a lot of waves when it came out, but it's also powerful in a very subtle way. I first saw it in an economy class plane. I just want to sit back up and say this movie had a huge impact on me. So I introduced it as kind of a low-budget movie that is kind of very subtle, and yet it had a profound impact on me, and I want to explain why it had such an impact on me. First of all, I saw it in an economy class seat on a plane to Africa, and is where I sometimes go for work. And my wife tells me sometimes when she watches movies in a plane, she gets really emotional. But I think for me, I'm not usually like that. And yet, by the end of this movie, I honestly had tears in my eyes. So just setting it up for you. And the reason why it impacted me so much is because of some questions that I've been asking myself about my faith. Just a few days before I got on that plane, I had met with my discipleship group, and the topic of miracles came up. And I don't know about you, but I've sometimes have trouble believing miracles, at least in the types of miracles that we hear about in the New Testament, where Jesus makes the blind see, helps the lame walk. I think I remember making some comment that, you know, God just doesn't really work like that. And I think the reason I've had trouble with it is because I had this image of God as being this kind of distant, all-knowing, all-loving, all-powerful being, but as someone, a being who's distant and remote. And the reason for that is that I think if he was engaged and involved in everyday lives, that would kind of violate our free will. And for me, that didn't leave a lot of room for miracles. So when I heard the rest of the people in my group talk about how they experience God in their lives every day, and they experience miracles in their lives, I think it really had an impact on me. So it made me sit back and think about, you know, how had my faith changed so much in that I still believed in God and I still believe that he was all-knowing, but I had trouble believing that he was, you know, present with me all the time. And it made me feel like I'd lost something, you know? And so when I saw this movie, I saw it, and I want to say that this movie is not at all spiritual. It's not a religious movie. And so what I'm going to talk about today, I'm reading a lot into the movie that the producers probably never intended for someone to read into it. And that's because I was in a certain place in my faith, and so I saw it through my own lens of questioning. And so what this movie has helped me work out is that experiencing God is so much more than in believing in something. It's about cultivating a sense of wonder and awe in our lives. It's about hoping in something greater and better. And it's about love, of course. So I think if you have these three things, you have a lot of things. Everything seems to come together. And there's one passage in the Bible that probably says everything that I want to say today. And that's the famous passage from 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verses 8 through 13. So if we can see that script, that passage. Love never fails, but where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they will be stilled. Where there is knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part. But when completeness comes, what is in part disappears. When I was a child, I talked like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I put the ways of childhood behind me. For now we see only a reflection as in a mirror. Then we shall see face to face. Now I know in part. Then I shall know fully, even as I am fully known. And now these three remain, faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. I love that passage. Now, I'm going to cut to the first clip in a moment. And these next two clips were introduced to the two main characters in the movie, Jeff and Pat.
I watched Signs again last night. It keeps getting better every time I see it. It's funny. The first time you watch it, it's kind of hard to understand what it's about. Just sort of meanders. And then everything comes together in this one perfect moment at the end. And when you watch it a second or third or fourth time, you start to see that all of this randomness is leading towards a perfect moment. My favorite character is the little girl. Everyone thinks she's so strange because she can't finish a glass of water. She's convinced that they're contaminated. So by the end of the film, there are glasses of water littered around this house. And then it's the water that saves them. And that was fate. I can't help but wonder about my fate, about my destiny.
Sorry if that bathroom scene made some of you uncomfortable. But Jeff, you're introduced to him. You find out later that he's a single, unemployed, 30-year-old guy who still lives at home with his mom. But he believes that he has a purpose in life, that the universe will reveal to him eventually. And I think some people might write him off as delusional, I think, but there's something about him that I really like and I really connect. And I think what it is that he has this conviction that there's something bigger and better out there. He doesn't understand it. It doesn't really make sense to him, but he believes it and he hopes in it. And I think that's a beautiful thing. I think secondly, he doesn't cave in to what the world tells him he should be living. He doesn't cave in to kind of expectations society has and kind of how people define what success is. He's a pretty genuine person. If you were to talk to him, there's nothing. He's exactly who he seems to be, and I like that. But of course, he doesn't have everything figured out. His hope is pretty shallow, and I think, and I may be projecting here, but I think what he's missing is that he doesn't have the biblical stories of Jesus, for example, to go to for wisdom. He doesn't have community of people that he can talk to. He never leaves his basement. He doesn't have community of people that he can work things out with and ask questions. And I think also, and I'm applying it to my own faith life, is that he doesn't have centuries of tradition and Christian thought that anchor him, I think. And I think if he had any of these things, he would know that you're not going to find purpose in life just by staying at home. If anything, the secret sauce of life is love, and love calls us to do the opposite. It calls us to go out into the world. It calls us to engage with people, engage in relationships, even if they're messy. And you can't just wait for life to happen to you. In this next scene, we're introduced to Pat, Jeff's brother, who's very different.
Some straws and sliced white rose, some straws, and sliced white rose of whipped cream.
Bam!
Bon appetit.
What's the special occasion?
This is one of those just because breakfasts, you know? It sounds corny, but relationships are like flowers, and flowers need water to bloom, and consider this sprinkling from a watering can.
Well, thanks. That's
You're
nice.
You're welcome. Enjoy. Oh my gosh. I got some good news, actually.
Yeah?
I got a phone call from Randy.
Is he the guy that we talked to at that barbecue?
Oh no, that's a different Different Randy.
The deaf guy's name was Randy, right?
Yes.
I liked his wife.
Different Randy.
We should have them over.
Yeah. This is Randy at Millennium Porsche. Can I tell you something? With no money down, this thing is practically free.
Pat!
Wait, just... Okay.
No.
You don't just start
That's
with
what
no.
This is.
Don't start with no. You're just like in this mindset, and you're not
it's
even.
It's not a mindset. We don't have the money.
Yeah, that's the mindset I'm talking about.
Honey, look, I'm trying to be like really careful, and I've cut back on some things, and like we promised we were gonna get a house this year, and I'm just trying to be a grown up about this.
Surprise. We got it. This is happening. Look, everything you just said about the house, you know, our future, you're exactly right. And I'm so lucky to have you looking out for us in that way. But I'm looking out for us in another way. I'm looking out for that intangible thing that every couple needs, and it's a little bit of magic, and it's a little bit of danger, frankly. This is gonna solve a lot of our problems. This tension right now, as soon as you get in that thing, and you feel the energy, and you feel it rumble in your gut. If you don't get turned on, you're made of stone.
Where is it?
It's in the driveway. Oh, come on.
Okay, that's...
Right, so Pat is very different. Unlike his brother, Pat is married. He has a job. He doesn't live with his parents, with his mom. But he's obviously unsatisfied with his life. He's looking for something, something to make it more exciting, to spice things up. And in this scene, he's almost a caricature of a person. He's hard to identify with. He's hard to he's not very likable. But I think as the movie unfolds, there is something about him that I can relate to, and that I see a little bit of myself in him. And that's, he's very cynical, and you see that later in life. He's cynical about his brother's faith in something bigger. He's very cynical about love in general. He's just cynical about life in general. And I may not care about fancy cars. I'm not going to go out and buy a Porsche, but I do have tendencies to be cynical about things, and I do pursue things that probably get in the way of loving the people that are near me. And I want to say that cynicism is something that I see myself, and I see that as the opposite of hope, which, as I talked about earlier, because hope is believing that things can change, that things can be better. Hope is believing that there's something bigger out there, and that love will win over hate, and that God will triumph. And I think cynicism is the opposite of that. Cynicism, if you let it go, it can turn into despair, and cynicism is very toxic. And I think you can see that. Pat is a very toxic person in a lot of these scenes. So before we go to the next clip, I need to give a quick synopsis of what happens, because there's a lot that we miss. In the next scene, Jeff receives a phone call from somebody that's asking for Kevin, and the caller insists that Kevin lives at home at where Jeff is, and Jeff is convinced that there is no wrong number, that every number is a right number, he says. And so he's convinced that there's some message that he's not understanding, but that's in there. And so he goes out and he looks for Kevin, and he's on a bus, and he ends up following this person who has Kevin on his jersey. And that doesn't end very well for him. But then he ends up walking home, and he randomly runs into Pat, his brother, who had been drinking at Hooters and driving around in his Porsche. Of course, then Pat smashes the Porsche into a tree, and in the course of over the course of different events, they end up spotting Linda, Pat's wife, who's in a restaurant. Who's with another man, and so they decide to follow Linda and this other man to see what's going on, and that leads into a whole series of different antics. And in this next scene, Jeff and Pat are walking because Pat's Porsche ended up being towed, and so they don't have a way to get home. So they're walking, and they end up. Also, I should back up. Pat and Jeff saw Linda with another man in a restaurant. So Pat's in a really bad place right now. But they end up on their way home walking. They happen to walk past the cemetery where their father is buried, and you find out that their father died when they were both young. So this is the scene. This is where we are right now in the movie.
What else?
I did hear her say that she felt neglected.
Sounds like they're banging already.
It's possible.
They'll never get married, dude. It sucks.
Really? I think it would be kind of awesome.
Well, it's not.
Okay. I don't want to talk about this anymore.
Okay.
I'm sick of walking.
Okay.
Huh. Is that what I think it is?
This really weird dream about Dad lately.
Really?
Yeah. He's a teacher, and we're in this classroom with a whole bunch of kids, and we all sit down, and Dad asks everyone, "What's the greatest day in the history of the world?" And one kid is like, "Christmas," and Dad's like, "No." And whenever they get the answer wrong, they have to leave the room. And eventually, it's just me and Dad. And he looks at me, and he says, "Pat, what's the greatest day in the history of the world?" And I don't know, so I'm nervous, and I'm like, "Dad, I don't know." And he just looks at me, and he smiles.
He says today.
How'd you know
that? He says, "Today is the greatest day in the history of the world."
Yeah.
I have that dream, Pat. Except in mine, it's me and Dad in this car.
Okay. I guess it's just something he said to us when we were kids or something. It's like floating around in both of our brains.
What is wrong with you?
Pat, what?
What is wrong with you? Why do you want to be like this?
What are you talking
about? We're having the same dream.
What?
Why do you want to live like this? You're drifting through this life. With no awareness of how special this is.
You want to talk about what's happening right now, right here? What's happening right now is that I'm getting lectured by my pothead brother who lives in our mom's basement at 30 years old about how I don't understand the universe. Hey, here's some understanding for you. A job and a car and a wife and an apartment.
What? I got really loud at the end, but... So what really strikes me about this scene is just how differently Pat and Jeff react to the fact that they've both been having the same dream. And for Jeff, this has to mean something. He doesn't understand it. He doesn't understand what it means, but he's completely awestruck by it. And he's grateful. He sees it as, wow, this is a precious moment that I'm sharing with my brother. This is incredible. And Pat sees it obviously very, very differently. He writes it off as coincidence. I don't think he would even have thought about it anymore if Jeff hadn't said something. And I want to be more like Jeff in this scenario. And I'm not saying that we should all I should see meaning in all our dreams as meaning something. But I want to be able to live more of my life as if I want to let myself be awestruck by moments in my life. Right? I want to let myself wonder, like, what is God trying to tell me? You know, what does this all mean? I want to be able to walk through life, not let it just pass me by, but, you know, just let myself be amazed by things, right? And then so I want to actually talk about a short story in my life where I feel like I had that, I was in a situation where I could either engage with it as in terms of wonder or just kind of walk away. So I was a Peace Corps volunteer in Chad a long time ago, and I was in a big village or a small town. It didn't have any plumbing, didn't have any electricity, and I'd been there for about 9 months, and I was feeling very isolated, very alone. You know, it's always hot there, very uncomfortable, and I was on the border of being, you know, borderline depressed, I think. And I remember it was the middle of the day, and I was coming back from the local church, which is on the other side of town. So I had to walk through all of downtown to get back to my. I lived in a compound with very little privacy, so. I think I was just going to go home and lay down and just wait for the day to end. And this, in the middle of town, this lady, older lady, comes up to me and speaks to me and chatting Arabic and says, "Talihini, you know, come here, come here." And like, I didn't have enough Arabic to be able to ask, you know, "What do you want?" So I just like, "Okay, I'll come." So I followed her into this compound, and I walk in, and there's this. There's this newborn baby in this young lady's arms, and she's lying down in bed. And I didn't know her. I didn't know the older lady. But this older lady saw me and wanted me to see this newborn. And I, you know, it was a short exchange because, like, my Arabic was not very good at that point. But we talked a little bit, and I left. And I remember feeling like, wow, like I'm so touched that she would, like, I really needed this. And it's the miracle of life, and I got to be there. I mean, she'd just been born that morning. It was pretty amazing. And actually, she ended up, that lady ended up naming her son after me. And Charles is not a common name, so there is now a, I don't know, 10-year-old something named Charles running around in some village in Chad. And we ended up getting to know each other better. But you know, in that moment, I could have, number one, I could have just kept on walking and gone home and said, you know, I'm not going to engage with this moment. And I also could have actually walked in that compound and seen that newborn and just said, "Oh, well, that's neat," or "Wow, what do they want from me?" You know, I could have been very cynical about it. And I was a very cynical person even back then in some respects. But I think I saw it as this kind of, holy moment, but just a moment that I wanted to just be awestruck by it. And I wish I could, you know, do more of that in my life. Just stop and think, wow, what is happening here? What is God trying to tell me? I think in this scene, so even though I want to be like Jeff, I see a little bit of myself in Pat as well. Sorry, where am I? Okay, sorry. So Jeff, I think I see a little bit of myself in Pat. I see myself looking at Jeff and saying, "Wow, you're just being naive. You're really reading too much into this. Like, you know, wake up to reality. You know, the universe is not trying to tell you something." And I think this makes me think of a passage. Makes me think of the story of Doubting Thomas. You know, the disciple of Jesus, who he was the disciple. You know, the Jesus, when he was resurrected, he came and he appeared to the other disciples, but he didn't appear to Thomas at first. And Thomas, you know, doubted that Jesus had actually been resurrected. In fact, he said, "Unless I see the nail marks in his hands and put my finger where the nails were and put my hand into his side, I will not believe." I think when I think about this, you know, it had been a week since Jesus had died. I think he's probably feeling a certain kind of despair. You know, he had all this hope that Jesus was going to, you know, do something and be something. And yet it had been a week and nothing had happened. On the other hand, he had spent 3 years with Jesus. He'd seen his miracles. He had seen, he had heard his prophecies, and yet he still doubted that Jesus would come back. And I think this is the famous art rendition of this the story in the Bible. I think that it's encouraging for me that that someone like Thomas can still doubt. And I think it's because For me, it tells me that it's okay to have doubt. It's okay to have uncertainty. And sometimes it's okay to not really understand, you know, what is going on. What is God trying to tell me? I think it's also interesting to know how Jesus reacts to this. He doesn't get angry. He actually just says, he's actually very patient with him. And he says, now you believe because you have seen me. And then he says, blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed. In this next clip, Pat confronts his wife, who he finds in a hotel room with another man. And now I'm going to warn you, this is kind of an intense scene. A lot of this movie is kind of, it feels like a documentary, so it kind of feels like you're walking into the room and you're seeing them angry. Let's turn on. Let's look, take a look.
Actually,
I think
that it's understandable.
Look, what I need to know, I just need to know one thing, okay?
Okay, what?
Okay. Are you mad because you came in here and you found me with another man?
Yes. Or, yes.
Or are you mad because you're afraid that you might lose me?
What? There's like a part B now?
Please don't do that.
It's just semantic
bull. Yes. It isn't.
Okay.
You really don't know the difference because if you don't understand the difference.
Linda, I'm gonna try to listen to you blabber about whatever this is, and I'm gonna try to understand your incoherent babble. Go.
Why do you always do that?
What? I'm listening.
No, you're not.
Yeah, no. I'm trying.
You always just make me feel so stupid.
I'm sorry, it's stupid. I catch you trying to cheat on me. And now, like,
I'm really just trying to have a conversation with you right now. Because you know what? When I ask you if you would take me to Cochon, you laughed at me.
Who cares? I'm sorry.
But when I asked Steve, he just, you know, said, let's go.
Yeah, because he wanted to get in your pants.
Well, maybe, but at least he's trying to put in some time and effort.
Let me tell you something about Cochon.
You want to ask me to take you there? Fine, I'll take you to Cochon. Well,
God,
yeah.
You're not even listening to me. You know, you just...
No, I'm hearing you. I'm hearing you loud and clear.
You're not. It's not about the restaurant. I just want you to, like, care that I want to go there. And do you think it's about this guy? Because I really don't even fuck about him. He's nice. He listens to me.
I'm nice.
But you and I, we are petty. We are passive aggressive with each other. We don't even fight. I mean, this is a miracle right now. And what I think, honestly, is that we have no house. We have no kids. Thank God. It would be really easy for us to just walk away. It'd be super simple. And that is what I think that we should do.
Hang on. Yeah, can we not talk about this anymore? Let's just go home and sleep on it and
forget it. I'm gonna go stay at my mom's.
So I think what strikes me about the scene is just how uncomfortable Pat is with being vulnerable. The whole movie, you see him trying to be something that he's not. He's trying to put on the show of being somebody who's exciting, someone who's dangerous. And he's put in a situation, and he's not really being vulnerable in terms of being honest about how he feels, right? He's more on the offensive, like this is my opportunity to kind of get an edge over her in this argument. And I think at the end you see that, you know, all of a sudden there's this threat of a divorce. And things get really real for him. And he just kind of steps back. And I think the fact is he's actually really unhappy. He's really unhappy with his life. I think it's because he doesn't really see what he already has. He doesn't really see what he has right in front of him, actually. And I think it's, you know, it's a lot of things in life. You don't really realize how much you have until you're on the point of losing it. So I found the scene a little bit hard to watch because the emotions are so raw. But I think it's important also just to understand the next scene that we're about. This is the last scene as well that we'll see today.
wish that I could see the world like you.
Really?
I don't know. You had this, like, belief in this cosmic order. I really envy that.
You don't want to be like me. I'm not happy at all. You know, since Dad died, I've had this feeling that it had to be for a reason. I keep thinking that the signs are all about me, but maybe they're about you and your marriage.
My marriage is not good. It is a disaster. I just want to feel like I love Linda. And I want to feel like she loves me. That we both want to, like, be in love. I miss it. I want it so bad.
I think you should just say that to her.
It's not that simple, Jeff.
I don't know. I think it could be that simple. I mean, wouldn't you be psyched if Linda walked in here right now and sat down in this tub next to you and said, Pat, I want to be in love with you again?
That would be awesome.
Dude, you need to say that to her. You need to tell her that right now.
This is also a great scene, I think. Because I think for the first time, you really feel for Pat. He just seems like a likable, you can relate with him. So I think for the first time, you realize that he's just like everyone else. We all want to be loved. We all want to be in love. And he's incredibly vulnerable. You know, he's actually being true to himself. He's genuinely saying how he feels. I think it helps to be in a bathtub, to be honest. I think if we were all to have our arguments in bathtubs, it would probably end very, very differently. But he also, at the end, he also has this breakthrough about what he really wants and what he really needs. Because when Jeff tells him that he should just tell Linda how he really feels, he just tell Linda that he wants to be in love and he wants to be in love. At first he says it's not that simple, but then he says, you know, you can see kind of lights go on. Like he says, maybe it is possible. And all of a sudden he has hope. He has hope that things could be different. And I think that speaks a lot to the power of hope to change how we see the world, to change what we do. It's a powerful thing. And I think Jeff, too, has a little bit of insight. He realizes that it's maybe not about him, that maybe it's about him and in relationship with other people, right? That maybe finding purpose and meaning is about helping and loving others. And so this, which for me is a huge insight for me, and it's exactly what Jesus says when he says the first will be last and the last will be first, and be servants to everyone. That's where you truly find purpose and meaning in life. So that was the last clip, and if you want to see how the movie ends and see, it does all kind of come together in a very subtle way, though. It's not too corny, in my opinion. So if you haven't seen it, you should check it out. So I saw this movie 2 years ago. It was right after the God in the series, God in the Movie series. And I remember thinking, next year I really want, maybe I'll talk about this. So I had a year to kind of think about it off and on, and then so that next year I was slated to talk about it, and I was all ready and I prepared for it. And then that day there was an electrical fire in the kitchen, And then they called the firemen, and so we were all outside, and we couldn't go back in, and I was canceled. So I was like, what, is that a sign? So I had to wait a whole other year, and then once again I was slated to do it. Here I am today. I was preparing for anything just in case, but I'm like, but you know, and sometimes I was thinking about this, and you know, was it a coincidence that I saw this movie when I did? Was it a coincidence that the movie was, that my talk was canceled last year, so I had even more opportunity to kind of dig into it? This movie, every time I look at it again, and every time I say, you know, what does this mean for my faith? What does it mean for me? I get new insights. And it's really helped me dig into my faith, and it's really helped me kind of grow in my faith. So is it a coincidence? You know, maybe, maybe not. I do believe that God is capable of anything, and I do believe that the Holy Spirit is here with me, guiding me. And this movie has impacted me a lot. And I think my first insight, one of my biggest insights, is that there's a lot I don't understand about God, and there's a lot that I don't understand about what God wants for me. But I think the more that I kind of explore it, and more that I lean into that mystery, it becomes even more mysterious. And if I just let myself dwell in that mystery, it actually helps me cultivate the sense of like awe, and helps me with my faith. And so my first takeaway is that is what that's what it means to have faith. It's not believing a set of statements. It's just kind of engaging into that mystery. It's exactly in that, like in that passage from 1 Corinthians where Jesus or Paul says, you know, we look in a mirror, we see a reflection in the mirror, and we know in part, but one day we'll know in whole. Right? The idea is that we can't know it all, and that's what faith is. We can't prove it. We just have to hope. We have to have confidence in what we hope for. And secondly, I think hope in Jesus and everything he represents is a powerful thing. And I think when you have hope and you couple that with faith and love, anything is possible. But also cultivating hope and faith, it needs to be intentional. It needs to be a choice that we make every day. We need to cultivate that in our lives. And for me, it's been helpful to kind of also have some of these spiritual disciplines that we talk about of constantly praying and being thankful for what I have in my life. Also, just the exercise that I used, exercise a reflection on my life and what's going on and thinking, you know, how is God working in my life? What is God trying to tell me? Just that being intentional about reflecting on life and the meaning of life, I think, has been very helpful. And so, if you take anything away from today in the movie, I hope it would be that that it's about faith, which is about engaging in mystery. And faith is not always, you know, knowing exactly what it is that God is trying to tell you, knowing exactly what God is. But it's about engaging in that mystery, and it's also about hope. Hope that the world can be better, that God is present, that love will triumph over hate. And it's also about love, obviously. Love is the most important thing. So I'll stop there.